Oh, I don't think Will's coming.
Oh, boo.
Yeah, I know, right? Welcome to episode 25 of the Traveling Mages, your show focusing on the magic lifestyle, current magic news, and anything else we come up with. I'm your host, Jose Lee, and joining me back is my co-host, Chris Quia.
Oh, hayo gozaimasu.
Oh, you had to throw
yeah, sorry.
You had to throw in the Sue in there, huh?
Yes. I was actually imitating one of my Japanese coworkers who always speaks with such, I don't know, he's always like really loud. You can always tell he's in the room because he just like enunciates his words and he's really loud. He's like, Sasuga desu. It's like, oh my goodness.
Oh, is it like he enunciates every single syllable, even the silent ones?
Yeah. It's pretty funny. It's like just like so loud. Everyone knows he's there. And my boss, whenever he sees him, the first thing he says is like, shh, she's kind of used to get outside to like, you know, be quiet.
I'd just be like, Urusai.
Urusai, yeah.
That means shut
but
up.
But you know, like boss to coworker, you can't just like be, you know, mean and be like, shut up.
Yeah.
Anyways,
all right, so yeah, you know, this is a kind of exciting week for everybody because everybody's busting modern Masters boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, everybody, I'm getting a little jealous because a lot of people are opening a lot of cool foil stuff.
Yeah. What was it? I bought two boxes actually, and in one box I opened a foil Fulminator Mage and a foil Mach Topol.
Oh, that's cool.
But then Sean gets his one box, and then he opens it, and he was like, well, I don't think this pack could get any better than it is. And then he opens the foil Goyf. And this is all Japanese, by the way.
Oh, geez. See, I don't know. Because the math was done in Modern Masters.
Uh-huh.
And it just based on the math that they were doing, it just seemed that people weren't going to get – I mean, the Mythics were going to be amazing, but then everything else was going to suck.
No one's say amazing. I opened a Comet Store in my second box.
Right. Well, true. But the difference between this Modern Masters and the last Modern Masters is that there's way more value in the Mythic slot, but there's not that much value in the Rare slot.
Or even the Uncommons and Commons, because if you think about it, the only common that's really, really valuable, and this one is Remand.
Yep.
Bolt is somewhat electrolyzed, but I mean, those are the only real three. I mean, in the last one, you had Kitchen Finks, you had Path Exile, you had Electrolyze, Helix. I mean, you had a lot more cards that were like, or Eternal Witness. You had a lot more cards that were at least, you know, felt pretty good at open.
Yeah, you had, what is it, the 2-1, the one that's used in Splinter Twin?
Pestermite.
Pestermite was in there. Yeah, there was a lot of big staples that just common and uncommon staples in there. So yeah, that's, I don't know. I think I'm partially better because I resolved not to buy any boxes. I still don't regret it, but then I played Standard yesterday, and I won two packs of Modern Masters, and the guy's like, well, you know, as usual, you can take store credit, or you can just take the two packs of Modern Masters. And I was like, oh, what the hell, let's open two packs of Modern Masters, what can I get? And I got one Ant Queen, and then everything else, I don't even remember what I got, because it was just so craptastic. Yeah, but the only thing of note was the Ant Queen, and then based on
Out of two packs.
And I know two packs, it's a very small sample size. But the point is that at the cost of Modern Masters, I could have pocketed that store credit and bought singles and just gotten whatever card I wanted from Modern Masters. You know, besides maybe Goyf and some of the Mythics, a lot of the cards there that I could have won, maybe like a Fulminator or the or I could have gotten what is it? A ley line, or I could just outright bought the card with store credit, and then instead I'm just like, oh, I don't know, let's open some packs of Modern Masters, and then it's just like, oh, this is terrible.
Take a gamble, yeah. I mean, that's really what it is when you buy packs. It's the same as anything. With Modern Masters, it's just you're taking a bigger gamble than normal.
Yeah, it was, I said it like 2 years ago. You're paying for the privilege of playing the Tarmogoyf lottery.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, so that's pretty depressing. And then So, but then again, I'm going back today, and I'm gonna play again, and we're gonna play for some more Modern Masters packs. But I think this time I'm just gonna take the damn store credit.
you're not gonna like try it again just because it's so discouraging to open something that's crappy.
Well, right, and you know what? I'm gonna give a plug to my store because this I finally found a store in Korea that I really really like. The shop's name is Kindle. If you found yourself in South Korea, look them up. It's Kindle MTG. They're a really great store. You should check them out. The owners are really nice. They cater very well to foreigners. They speak English, and they're very happy at trying to make sure that if you feel comfortable playing in their store, even if you're a foreigner. So I really like that about that shop. But the nice thing is that when they have their tournaments, you can refuse the prices and just take the store credit.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So you take the store credit, and then you can use that to you can get sealed product, you can get singles from the display case, you can get sleeves, you can get a Coke if you want. I mean, whatever you want to do with it, you're allowed to do it. And that's really awesome because you just start saving up your store credit, and eventually you can start getting stuff from the legacy case, and that's pretty cool. So that's
because you just accumulate it over time, and it doesn't really feel like you're using money because it's just what you earn from your winnings kind of thing.
Right, and you can actually you can use your store credit to pay for other tournaments.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
that's really cool. How much? Like, it sounds like your store credit accumulates pretty quickly, though. If you had the choice between two Modern Masters packs or just store credit.
That's what I'm saying. I should have taken the store credit. Now I'm like really regretting it.
Well, how much does it give you? Like $25 or something?
Yeah, I think that would have been like close to $24-$25. That's what I would have gotten out of it.
Dang.
Yeah.
Zero, they do Modern Masters here, right? So it's 4,000 in the entry, but unfortunately, they do still do the rare draft.
Yeah, that's
which actually didn't bother me because my rares were junk. Well, I guess I opened a Splinter Twin, but I didn't want to play it, so I passed it because it was in my third pack. I played a red black Bloodlust deck, and I was 1 point away from getting first, and it was just because on the last game, the match that mattered, I just kept I drew like seven lands in a row, and what did it for me were I had two Goblin Firestingers on the board that he couldn't deal with, and I just kept pinging him for damage, and like he was building his board state, he had all these like big creatures, and I was just like, oh crap, I just hope he doesn't try to attack because it's going to force me to block, and I have to eventually use my Firestingers to on the fence. Yeah. We were just building our boards at that point.
So is the limited fun?
Limited's pretty fun, yeah. I mean, it's actually pretty hard to dissect because Sean and I have built like maybe, I like to get the full value out of my boxes. So, I mean, we made a bunch of sealed pools with what we had. And, sealed and draft, definitely the archetypes are, in draft, the Bloodthirst, I'd say it's actually a really good deck if you can get the cards. I mean, I got, like, two Stormblood Berserkers, two Blood Ogres, two Goblin Fireslingers, two Vampire Lacerators, and just like a nice bird suite. But I feel like in sealed, it's a lot harder to actually get away with that kind of deck because it's slower in nature and format. And unless you can really get a deck that can capitalize on it, it's just kind of hard. But I think Sean and I found that, at least with our pools, because we made like maybe six each, that Domain was actually quite a strong archetype.
Really?
Domain or 4 or 5 color. I mean, you have a lot of ways just to get the cards that you need. And then once you get those 5 colors, you can do some pretty ridiculous things like that World Heart Phoenix. You can just recur it as a 4/4. And then I think one of the other good archetypes was like
what was
green
that?
Black.
Something.
My phone was vibrating. Oh,
okay, huh? It sounded like somebody just went woo hoo hoo. I was like, what?
No, I have people in the background. Apparently, they're just like, whoa, let's talk about Modern Masters. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
But yeah, so there's like green, like a token strategy. It was actually pretty good. I think it was because Sean had some like he had like a Creek with Liege. He had an Ant Queen. He had like just some other good Convoke cards like Bestial Menace. and just like cars that clocked up the ground really quickly. So I feel like flyers are a pretty big deal too, because there's not too many ways to punish them. I mean, you have Cloud Elemental, which is a 2/3, but the only board wipe in the set, aside from all the stuff, is actually Savage Twister, the uncommon red green. Well, there's Common Storm too.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, have you played it yet? I know Will played one earlier today, so I wanted to get him to talk about that. But I mean, have you? I saw some guys start a draft, and I mean, that looked kind of cool. I don't know. Like I said, I'm somewhat down on this format, but I mean,
Yeah, I mean, well, we played it, and like I told you, in my second box, I opened the Common Storm, but I would love to open Common Storm in like draft, like in limited, because that card's an absolute beating. What was it like? There's a card called Cathodian where you add 3 to your mono pool when it dies, and Sean had like these pretty big creatures, and so I traded my Cathodian with the card in combat, and then I used that mana and all of what I have just and, like basically decimated his entire team with Common Storm.
I see.
Like it's like 5 damage each. That's kind of beating, and it's not even that hard to achieve.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. And it's so, I mean, for me, the biggest thing with Modern Masters has been that it's, I just, A, I didn't think the value was in there. B, there's only 2 to 3 cards that I actually wanted, so I just didn't feel like opening, spending hundreds of dollars in chasing some card that I could just buy for maybe 15, 20. You know,
Yeah.
yeah. For me, it was just about my excitement on Modern Masters was the reprinting Fulminator, and then as soon as they reprinted Fulminator, he dropped, and I picked up 3 for $18 each, and that was, I think that's a pretty good price for Fulminator, and that's, you know, I'm getting them more than half price, so that was my excitement over Modern Masters, and if anything, Fulminator Mage prices had dipped so hard that I was already picking them up at 18 about a week and a half or 2 weeks. Before this week, before Modern Masters started.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the idea behind that though is because Fulminator Mage was only printed one time in a very low print run, because that was, at like Magic's point where there weren't too many people that were in the game,
Right.
and then even then, Fulminator Mage is not like, I mean, it's a format staple, but you only really see it in Jund or like Living End. It's not, it doesn't appear in too many decks.
Right.
But yeah, I agree with that. It's As financially, Sean and I agree that it's kind of like an open a goy for bust kind of thing as far as opening a box goes.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
But I
Hold.
mean, I did and it's funny because you said you were going for cards. I was going for cards like Noble Hierarch, which I did open 2 of at least, fortunately. But then I got like so I was going for Noble Hierarchs, like Relief Leashes and cards like that. But then I opened like a full play set of Cryptic Commands, and I was like, I already have 4, so now I have 8 Cryptic Commands.
Holy crap, I just realized something.
What?
Somebody just sent me a Twilight Mire on Puka points. A Puka trade.
Oh, well, that's pretty cool.
No, I just bought 4.
Oh, well, okay, that sucks.
Yeah. All right, lesson learned. If you buy the card, make sure you remove it out of your want list at a Puka trade. Just because it's,
Yeah.
I'm sitting here, I'm just uploading Puka trade, and all of a sudden my account just goes down by 3,000 points, which is like $30. I was like, what the hell just happened? And then I look at it. Oh, somebody just sent you a Twilight Mire. Oh, great. Thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. So,
What
no.
are you using a full playset for?
Well, okay. So I bought the playset just because I figured, you know what? I don't know when I'm gonna need it, and I just went ahead and picked it up because I didn't have it. My modern deck actually runs 2, so I figured, oh, what the hell? I'll get the extra 2, and I'll just because they, I got him on I got him on I got him I bought what is it? It was the lowest price in TCG player. So
Oh,
yeah, so I was just like, okay, that's fine. If I can get something at the lowest TCG player price, that's not bad at all. And you know what? They're actually in pretty good condition. They were heavily played when I ordered them,
well.
but I'm looking at them, and to me, like, I mean, I'm looking at them right now. There's like a little bit of like whiting on the sides, but I would still say that I would still call these slightly played. And but
Yeah.
heck, I got them way cheaper than the actual mid price. But now I'm getting a fifth one sent to me. I'm just like, oh, great. I don't even know what I want to do with this.
Tiny leaders, EDH, no,
I
the
guess.
singleton formats.
Yeah, well, I mean, I might just take one of the ones I have and ship that away.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, at least make some profit off of it if you're not going to use it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it'd be pretty nice if I could And I mean, it'd be nice if I could find someone that would take it from me. That'd be great, especially considering the fact that most of my points of a Puka trade came from just a lot of what is it? There were just commons and uncommons that junk rares that I had lying around from collections I had bought. Where I bought a collection, I took all the good money cards out of it, made my money back, and I had all these junk rares. I was like, well, this is not doing anything. And then every once in a while, I'd be like, oh, this one's a dollar. Okay, I'll send it. This one, 75 cents. If he wants two more, yeah, he wants three. Okay, I'll send it. And then all of a sudden, I guess I just got a Twilight Mire out of it, which is kind of cool. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at least you're like recycling things that you don't necessarily need for something. Well, that now you don't need, but I mean, at least a cool card.
Yeah, and it's at least, I mean, it's close to a $30 card, so that's not too bad.
Man, I need to get on that Puka trade, because I had another one of my friends who was telling me about it, and he just got like four Cabal Therapies in the mail, and I was just like, man, that'd be a pretty cool card to just grab four copies of.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty good, and it's a good deal.
But so speaking of, you said you run two Twilight Myers in your modern deck. What is your modern deck?
Right.
I mean, I have a guess, but I want you to talk about it.
Well, I'm playing Absent Midrange now.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the deck I'm playing now. And it's a good deck. I like it. I haven't gotten to play much with it because I was missing the Fulminator Mages. So I proxied up the Fulminator Mages, and I was playing, not in tournaments, just playing casually with people. And it seems to be fun. I can see why it's not super dominant right now.
Well, actually, if anything, because I mean, Obzon, people were seeing that Obzon, they were calling it, quote unquote, the new Jund, but I feel like Jund is on the rise again. Like, you noticed that? It's pretty surging.
Yeah, Jund's on the rise again, and the deck, that's kind of the deck of the week right now is, what is it, the Collected Company deck? Cause,
the Obzon Company, the combo?
Yeah, because it went 7-0 in the Magic Online Players Championship on day one, so it just completely dominated that. And it's cool. I mean, Collected Company is just really awesome. You can go turn four, end step, Collected Company, and then turn five, combo off, and win. And this is from an empty board state, and it's kind of powerful.
Yeah, I mean, I've even seen people win with that deck as, like, go infinite as early as turn three. But you drop a Monodorg.
Yeah.
Turn two, you drop, you know, Kitchen Phoenix, and then turn three, you drop, like, Onofenza, and then Sack Outlet, and there's your combo.
Yeah, yeah. And it's pretty cool. It's still disruptible, and I compare it to the old Pod deck, and it's still very – it's just as disruptible as the Pod deck was, but it's not as sure as the old Pod deck was. It's kind of weird because on the one hand, you need it to pod into something. So if you usually needed at least two or three creatures that you could pod away so that you can get the combo pieces you needed, right?
Right.
So the way that you used to disrupt pod very often was just make sure that they didn't have any creatures on the ground. So something
just
kill the creature. So something like a Pyroclasm or just any sort of Wrath, just it made pots stay miserable because they had to have two to three creatures out on the board to be able to
combo off,
right? I mean, Kiki Pot was able to do it with one creature, but that took a lot of mana, it was possible. But so when you're looking at it though, is that it's this deck can go from zero to combo.
Yeah.
And that's...
I mean, because Collected Company, I mean, like, and the thing about it is Pod is sorcery speed, and Pod is something that you can see coming. Like, you can definitely just anticipate the deck. And chances are you'll be able to tell when the deck is using Collected Company, too. But unless you have, like, disruption or interaction from your opponent, there's not really much you can do about it. They just kind of get to play it at instant speed. And they can combo off on you at instant speed, like, just went out of nowhere. Whereas Pod, you know, it's sorcery speed only, so they can't just, like, surprise you like that completely.
Right, right. And it's the old adage of modern, never tap out. Or if you're going to tap out, make sure you're holding a Pact of Negation or a Deathly Pact or whatever it is the black card is that kills
Slaughter Pact.
So, I mean, that's the only times that you're allowed to tap out in modern. But the point is, though, that it is really scary how Collected Company can just one spell, boom, But then again, Collecting Company can whiff, which is something that Pod never had to really worry about. It's for me once I had my two creatures on the board, all I had to do was spend a good 2 to 3 minutes figuring out what my chain was going to be, and I knew that the chain was going to go off once I figured out the chain, which is what I think made Kiki Pod so much fun to play, because it was always like solving a puzzle. You looked at it. You had a 4-drop. You had a 2-drop, and you're like, okay, well, how am I going to convert this into the combo? And actually, 2-drop and 4-drop. That probably would be 2-drop into the old the 1/4 that untaps Pod, and that's a 3-drop. You get that, and then you untap the Pod, and then you sack the 4-drop, and then you get Kiki out. Yeah, that's an easy one. But yeah. Anyway, just reminiscing.
Yeah, unfortunately, like Malira can still kind of live in through Modern, but Kiki can't really go in that deck anymore because, you know, the cards like Restoration Angel, you can't really use that.
Yeah, they're just so expensive to cast, and because Modern is starting to turn more and more like Legacy, where anything over a 3-drop, it's just not that powerful. And it's, well, except for, I guess,
I think it
Collected
has
Company.
Largely to do with Collected Company, just because, I mean, you don't want to play cards that are 4 or more in that Obsidian Company deck, whereas before, you know, you were able to play cards like Murderous Redcap is still part of the combo, but most people only play it as like one of, and yeah, they'll usually grab it via Court of Calling, if anything.
Well, and that should be your finance tip for the day. Abrupt Decay. If you don't have your Abrupt Decays now, get them, because let's be honest, I think Collected Company is just going to keep getting more popular, at least even if it's just a metagame deck. It was just one of those games that nobody was ready for. It's going to be popular because people are going to want to try it. And
yeah,
I think Abrupt Decay disrupts the combo, right? I'm pretty right on that.
It kind of, yeah. It does stop them in their tracks for the most part, because there's not really a whole lot of ways they can interact with that. I mean, I guess if people were to catch on to that, like, because I noticed that Abrupt Decay is, like, there's actually, the people are actually seeing a disadvantage to the card now because of Tasuga.
Ah, I see.
A lot of people are playing that card, and that card completely dodges Abrupt Decay entirely. So I was thinking, like, if people are finding Abrupt Decay to be such a problem in the company deck, they can just sideboard into Tasuga. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, take advantage of the resources and be like, well, now you can't kill this creature. You have to just deal with it.
Yeah, good thing I run Abrupt Decay and Path in my deck.
Yeah. Path makes it pretty bad. So
yeah.
But the deck that I'm trying to build right now, I definitely wanted to build the company deck, but I want to try to go for like the Grixis Twin deck now.
So that one runs black, right?
It runs black.
What
for,
do you get?
You get you get Tossiger, which is just amazing because it's unlike Goyf, it doesn't die to Abrupt Decay. You get Inquisition of Kozilek instead of Gitaxian and Probe, so you can actually interact with your opponent and take their stuff. You can get Terminate. You can get Slaughter Pact. Usually you'll play like 2 Terminates and Slaughter Pact. But I think the card that I think is really cool personally is Kolaghan's Command.
Oh, okay.
Because that card is always a 2-for-1. I mean, especially if you're, like, in the mirror or something.
Right.
You blow up their sky, you blow up their Pestermite, or you can get one of the creatures that you were killed back. It's always going to be a 2-for-1. And it's such a good card at 3 mana.
Right. Dromoka's Command.
Kind of like Electrolyze, but better.
Yeah. And Dromoka's Command's pretty good, too. I've seen it. I'm seeing it pop up in a lot of the Absan list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, The commands from Dragon's Dark Era are all pretty good. Well, 3 of them. Ojitai's Command's even talking about seeing play too, just like in the Jeskai control decks.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, it's largely an inferior cryptic command, but that 4 life that it gains you is not irrelevant. And you can also rebuy Snapcaster Mage in the late game.
Yeah, I can see that. It's, you know, it's, I guess in the right matchup, I would rather have Ojitai's Command over Cryptic.
Yeah, I would say, I think some lists are kind of finding like a split. Like most I see are like running 2 Cryptics, 1 Ojitai's, or maybe even 3-1 or 2-2. I don't know. I usually don't see people run more than just the 1 though.
I see. Yeah, I think if I was to do it, I don't know. Like, I guess Two and one sounds good, but a lot of lists were only running two cryptics to begin with.
The control heavy decks were running three. I know Grixis one only runs two, because the triple blue is a bit difficult to achieve, and not that it's not, because it's your primary color, but you don't want to like have to sacrifice getting your other colors just so you can choose a triple blue sometimes. But I guess your life total is a resource in this deck as long as you're not facing burn.
Right.
Which I think is just going to... I think it's going to be Grixis Twin's biggest challenge by far is just facing burn, because you don't really have any way to interact with them. And in even game two, I don't think the deck has a whole lot of life gain. So I feel if burn's just too oppressive, it might not be a good idea to play that deck.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's and that's the other thing going back to Dromoka's command is I like Dromoka's command because it actually blanks out burn and you can put a counter on it so you can have a creature survive a burn.
Yeah.
So that's pretty amazing. I like that a lot. It's just they just seem so versatile in this format. They're almost like sideboard cards you can run on the main board.
Well, I think what's crazy about it though, it's like. Because everyone likes the charms, right? Because they allow you to choose one mode out of three.
Mm-hmm.
But like card like Dromoka's command and Tarka's command, and I'll even put it Kolaghan's command in because it's cheap enough. Like it's two, three mana cards. They give you four options. You get to choose two of them, and they're not irrelevant at all. I mean, Dromoka's command is actually oppressive enough in standard that people are actually shying away from enchantments in general. Like people don't want to be playing like Outpost Siege or Whip of Erebos just because they're afraid of having to sack it to Dromoka's command and then, getting like two for one.
Well, it's really good right now. In my local meta, I'm almost thinking about going into three and the main one in the side for because Absan is getting so ridiculous in my local meta. I played a tournament last night and there was only nine people, but of those nine people, two of them, there was one Esper Dragons and one Mono Red, and everybody else was playing some variation of Absan.
Yeah,
and when you're playing the Absan matchup, in my opinion, the Courser, Courser makes such a big deal because when you're playing the Absan mirror, it's all about the top decks, and if you can minimize the number of lands you top deck through Courser, that just puts you so far ahead of your opponent. So the you can use Dromoka's command to make them sack Courser, and then you can put a +1/+1 on say your Rhino or even on your You can put the +1/+1 counter on Den Protector. And now Den Protector is a 4/3 now, and that's nothing to scoff at. And it's a really amazing card based on all the things that it can do. And you can break the top deck wars. You can totally put yourself at an advantage by making sure that you have better top decks because of Courser. And that's worth a lot, if you ask me, especially with the insane amount of Absan that I'm seeing locally. And is that something that you're seeing? Because I was listening to another podcast and I saw the GP Shanghai results. Was it Shanghai? And
are you talking about like very recently?
Yeah, like the one in China. And it's even that one. In the top eight, there was only two Absan decks. And I think I want to pull it up, but I think Mono Red just took it. Not Mono Red. Red Green Dragons took it down.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
I think I heard about that actually. But I don't remember like the specifics of it.
I'm pulling it up right now.
I saw like a GP Paris in the finals match where it was a green white company deck versus Obzon, and unfortunately for the green white company guy, I feel like his deck was a little bit suboptimal because whenever he used Collected Company, I think like at least two of the times he used it, the only card he got was one Elvish Mystic. And I'm like, that's like the worst thing to get. Yeah, you're paying four mana for that.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you're going to play like Collected Company, unless it's a card like Noble Hierarch, which you can just get you all your cards, you really need to just play cards that get you more value. Like you need to like Fleece Mane Lions or Savage Knuckle, but at least.
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah.
Much higher.
Jerry T did a video for Star City Games.
Uh-huh.
And in that video, he was showing Absent Aggro, and the way he was playing Absent Aggro is that sometimes he would bring in the Collected Companies, and he was playing Mono Red, and so what happened was that he just passes the turn with four mana, his opponent attacks with two tokens into his board, He attacks with two tokens, which were that's about one card because of the Dragon Fodder. Okay.
Right.
So then he plays Collected Company. He gets a Lion and he gets a Rakshasa Death Dealer. He blocks both of them, kills both tokens, and now he has two creatures on the board.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a 3-for-1. And you know what? Had it actually been something else, like had it been a Swift Spear or something like that, he would have gotten a 4-for-1.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. But I remember Jerry T actually uploaded like a different deck list where I don't think he was foregoing the companies, but he wanted to go back to something like Wingmate Rock.
Yeah, Wingmate Rock I think is actually very well positioned in the format again because besides Ojutai, there's not that many flyers out there.
And well, don't forget Stormbreath Dragon. That card's on the rise again because a lot of people are playing Abzan. And Stormbreath Dragon, like a lot of decks just aren't prepared for that card and they're just losing to it now.
Well, because
they're siding out like they're, you know, like they have Dromoka's Commands and Abzan Charm's main deck and
right.
They just can't touch Stormbreath Dragon.
No, and that's true. And it's just, but I guess I'm comparing it mostly to my local meta where it's just so Abzan heavy. But in the Abzan match, with the Wingmate Rock is both good and bad with Elspeth. So it's really good against Elspeth because let's say they play play Elspeth and you can use Wingmate Rock to kill Elspeth because you have two three fours flying into Elspeth, right? You know she can't protect herself against that. First off, and then secondly, if you play your own Elspeth, Elspeth can wrath the board. But your Wingmate Rocks were still alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, what's that?
And for having 6 power that doesn't actually die to Elspeth, that's pretty good. But I think the problem with Elspeth, though, is that she's very poorly positioned in the meta. Like, she just dies to Den Protector.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and that's my biggest frustration right now. And I've been talking about this for weeks now, and it's really annoying me. And I think it's just going to get worse in my local meta because so GP Shanghai, the number one deck was Absent Midrange by Yuki Ichikawa. And
you're right.
Yeah, what stands out about it is at first it starts really stock because you're like, oh, okay, 4 Corsair Crucifix. Yep. 4 Siege Rhino. Yep. And then you go 4 Deathmist Raptor. Oh, boy. 4 Den Protector, holy crap.
Yeah.
And then 4 Satyr Wayfinder, and then you have 2 Tasigur. So, I mean, literally what this deck does is you play Satyr Wayfinder, you put your Deathmist Raptor into your graveyard, and then you play Den Protector, and then you flip it, and then you get your Deathmist Raptor plus another card, which you probably put in there through Satyr Wayfinder. It's just so much card advantage. And then Tasigur.
And then you fuel your fuel for Tasigur, yeah.
Right, you fill up for Tasigur, and then Tasigur puts even more Deathmist Raptors in your graveyard, so then you can flip them with your Den Protector.
Well, but yeah, Tasigur can put cards in their graveyard, but people might be putting. Well, it's not cool either way.
It's not cool if you're like, yeah, here, go ahead and take the Deathmist Raptor. Like, what?
I remember Yuki Ichikawa. He couldn't decide which one was the worst card to take out, so his main deck actually got 61 cards.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, that was notable because we were like, well, which card is he going to take out? Because, I mean, if he won the GP, then, I mean, something was done right. I mean, he was definitely showing the value of all of those cards and how, I mean, that is value town right there. You grab those cards and...
Yeah, and
even if you whiff on Satyr Wayfinder, you're still putting 4 cards in the graveyard, and you get like a body for 2 mana.
And that's what's frustrating right now about just my local meta is that everybody around me is they're so into the Deathmist Raptor Den Protector combo, and it makes me miserable because at the beginning of the Dragon season, I was being very successful playing Abzan Control. I was getting top 3 in pretty much every tournament I played. It was just I would just sit there and I had answer after answer after answer after answer, and eventually I would play Elspeth, and sometimes Elspeth was an answer too, or I would just play Ugin, and I would just sit there and I would close out the game. But I'm finding more and more that just after long grindy matches, where I'm thinking, yes, I got this. I lost a match. Oh my god, it was so insane. I lost a match where I had stabilized. I had one removal spell left in my hand, and I had Ugin, and Ugin could raft the board, or he could deal he can lightning bolt something. And so I felt like, okay, I think I got this. So I just got to sit here, and I got to ping my opponent to death, and top cards, a couple of rhinos, a couple of other things, and we'll be good, right? My opponent goes, and he plays one Den Protector, flips the Den Protector, puts three Death Mist Raptors on the board, and then grabs a Hero's Downfall from the graveyard and kills my Ugin. Yeah. At this point, I'm just like, shit, I can't do anything.
Or it's even kind of bad. I remember there was a situation where, it was the same thing. The guy had two Den Protectors in the graveyard, and then he had a face down Den Protector, and he still had a nice board, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had like two Siege Rhinos or something.
Right.
He had two Siege Rhinos and then a face down Den Protector, and the opponent cast Ugin. And that's a tough decision. Because what do you choose? Do you choose to just get rid of the two Siege Rhinos, knowing that the Den Protector just flips up? It's one of those cards back because the board wipe does not get rid of the face down card.
Yep.
Relevant.
Oh,
he gets
his board wipe. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like you're either gonna take eight from something, or I mean, because Ugin's not gonna survive that, regardless of what happens. And it's a really feel bad position.
Yeah. Yeah. It's. A Den Protector is just so broken to me in Standard, it seems. I took out the two Tassigers I was running in my control list, and I put in two Den Protectors, and I haven't looked back. It's just like, yeah, this is what I want to be doing. This is a really, really good card, because it is very satisfying to say, Den Protector, blocker, and by the way, that really pesky removal spell. Yeah, because by the time I get done and I'm playing my Den Protectors, in the old list I was running, I had already burned like 2 to 3 removal spells. So I just went to go get the one I needed. So I just tailored it to the situation. By the time that I was playing Den Protector out, I was like, okay, you have a Planeswalker? Okay, I'm going to go get my Hero's Downfall, or I'm going to get the 4-mana one that exiles it.
Utter End.
Yeah. So it was like, well, okay, that's what you are. Oh, okay. You played a bunch of small creatures. You played two lions. Okay, I'm just gonna go get my Bioblight. Boom, 2-for-1. Actually, 3-for-1 if you think about it. So yeah, that's. I don't know. It's if you notice right now, green is so strong.
Yeah, I mean, even model green lists can be pretty scary just because of all the sweet interactions. Because the thing about Den Protector, though, is, I mean, it's like Eternal Witness, except it has a huge upside. I mean, like, that it's a 3/2, can't be blocked by weenie creatures. And it, like, you know, it not only replaces itself, but it combos with Raptor, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
And, like, Raptor was so good, like, in Limited, I would play Raptor, I would snap throw that in a blue-white deck in Limited.
Yeah.
And I almost won because, you know, I was able to just kind of, like, mill my Raptor. People would be like, why do you have that card in your deck? And then I play a Morph, and then I unflip it, and they're like, oh, crap.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so why don't we go ahead and talk about one of the Devotion to Green Light. Devotion screen. This is the list played by Lin Yang, and his list runs 4 Whisperwood Elementals, 4 Elvish Mystic, 4 Rattleclaw Mystics, 4 Seven Caridates, 4 Corsair Crucifix, 3 Atarkas, 3 Pelucranos, 3 Hornet Queens, 2 Serek the Hunt Colors, 2 Boon Satyrs, and 4 See the Unwrittens. Now, I don't know. What do I know, right? But this doesn't seem like a top 8 list to me, because it just... It seems so dirtily, and it seems so vulnerable to getting Wrath. But here it is in the top 8. So let's see what makes this list special.
Well, I would say Whispered Elemental is still fairly well positioned. I mean, it's not the best card ever. It is kind of falling out of favor.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm a bit surprised that he's not capitalizing a bit more on like the Manifest kind of thing. Because, you know, I would probably just put in the Den Protector Deathmist Raptor combo, because you have. Card, you know, Whispered Elemental Manifest.
Hey, you're falling off.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
But yeah, it is very vulnerable to Wrath. I mean, you have 12 Monodorks, and like, I just feel like it's just such a feel bad if you just get Anger of the Gods. But the thing is if you can land a turn 3 Whispered Elemental, I'd say you're pretty well positioned for the rest of the game.
Yeah. And you know what? Serek the Hunt Caller is actually pretty awesome. That's probably new tech to it. I mean, you still get 2 devotion out of it, but giving a 4/4 haste, that's pretty awesome.
Well, and Serac's gets to be like a 5/4.
Yeah, Serac's a 5/4. So yeah, and that's the thing is you can play Serac, and if you have formidable, he gains haste, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and then especially if you can give haste to a Tarka, I mean an 8/8 flying trample. I mean, unless you're staring down a Hornet Queen, it's not really a bad thing at all. Or even then, well, because you can't kill the full Hornet Queen just by itself.
Well, so you know what, you can have some insane. I guess yeah, I'm seeing like I think Serac is pretty cool because you can have 1 mana dork, right? Play doesn't matter.
Yeah,
play 1 mana dork, then you play turn 3 Pelucranos, turn 4 Serac, attack with both.
Yeah, just those explosive starts, and then the card that kind of helps you, like, you know, just in case you run out of gas, is Seed to Unwritten. I mean, it's kind of like Collected Company in this deck, except you know, Collected Company bigger.
Check this out. Okay, turn 1 Mystic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Turn 2 Courser. Okay, turn 3
okay.
Serac. Attack with Courser and Serac.
For 7, yeah.
For 7, turn 3. Turn 4, Pelucranos. Attack with Courser, Serac, Pelucranos for, what is that, 8? For 10.
Yeah.
Your opponent is at 4 and turn 3. So if you're playing, say, Esper, and they dirtled, and they kept a hand that had a lot of card draw, but not necessarily a lot of blow-up-y stuff, wow. That's
well, I think another thing too is that you're I think people are learning that it's definitely, I mean, quality card quality is really good too, but from what it seems like though is that you can get high quality cards that still give high quantity, you know what I mean? Like, because Den Protector, for instance, is a 3/2 that, like, it's like a high quality card, and it allows you to get more quantity, like, you know, Deathmiss Raptors, you can pull them out of the graveyard, and then Serac, I mean, like, you're still kind of getting value out of it, because it's kind of like you're, if you play Serac on turn 3 and it has formidable, it's kind of like you're getting a lava axe to the face, and you're repeatedly doing it.
Yeah.
And then Whispered Elemental, kind of replaces itself. It's kind of like Wrath Insurance. And then you get, like, if you can get Seedling Written off, you can grab, like, a Hornet Queen or an Atarka. I mean, as long as you don't grab one of the dorks. But, I mean, you're seeing 8 cards, so your chances of whiffing are pretty low in that case.
Yeah, and then the sideboard runs Hornet's Nest, like, for, I guess, against the aggro matchup. And then, let's see, Hornet's Nest, Nissa World Waker, Nelia's Disciple, 2 Arbor Colossus, and then 3 Senegos to Reveler. So, Senegos is in the sideboard.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem like he goes with the main game plan. I mean, if you're trying to go, like, wide, then I guess Enigos is a thing, but it just, I don't know, it doesn't really contribute much to the main game state. Because yeah. What it seems like you're trying to do is just achieve formidable as fast as possible, just bash base. And you don't really have any monosyncs to really take advantage of Enigos unless you're playing with full chronos, you just need to remove a bunch of creatures.
Okay, and then Gruul Dragons. I want to look at that list. Let's see. So, Gruul Dragons, we have 4 Stormbreath, 4 Thunderbreak, 4 Elvish, Mystic, 4 Goblin Rabble Master, 4 Rattleclaw Mystic, 4 Boonsader, 2 Den Protector, and 2 Ashcloud Phoenix. So even Gruul Dragons, they're playing Den Protector, and they're playing the only other innovation is I'm seeing Boonsaders, and then from there we have 3 Creator's Claws, 3 Draconic Roars, and 3 Arc Lightning.
Arc Lightning in the main?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It might be for the aggro matchup.
I guess, but I mean, I don't know. I guess if we're looking at, like, the red decks, it's kind of hard because, I mean, I guess the dash isn't too much of a thing, but I don't know. I don't feel like I would actually mean that, but I guess you can't really afford to use Anger of the Gods in a deck where, you know, your Elvish Mystics and Boonsaders both die to it.
Well, it's not the dash. I think the dash is powerful, but what I'm the play that is really scary is turn 1, Foundry Street Denizen, turn 2, Dragon Fodder, attack for 3. And with this, if you can play this card, you can – let's say that you're on the play. So then you pass your turn. Then they turn one. They play Den Protector. Then they pass it back to you. You pass it again, and then turn two. They do their thing. They hit for three, and then your turn three. You play Arc Lightning, and then with Arc Lightning, you just 2-for-1 him, and you only took 3 damage out of it.
Yeah, and you completely eliminated their board state. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that's I see that. That's it seems to me like it's a hedge against mono red more than anything.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, considering I think because the thing about it is from what I've seen in standard history, is that mono red is typically a deck that, you know, and as for when the format like becomes fresh again, like after a set, it stays pretty strong for about a month and then kind of peters out because people learn how to play against it. But in this case, though, I mean, your meta is really Obzon heavy. But from what I've seen in some other lists, Atarka Red is still pretty strong.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, I wonder if that has anything to do with it, because I feel that Abzan as a whole has a really good matchup against Mono Red.
Oh, yeah, I agree, because you just have, you have bigger creatures. They have to use your burn to just get by and just attack for damage. And then you just play, like, a Siege Rhino, you just set him back even more.
Yeah, but it feels like the Abzan lists, a lot of them don't have that great of a matchup against Esper Dragons. And that's the thing that I had been preparing for was Esper Dragons, but now I'm seeing my meta just devolving into just only Abzan, and it almost makes you just want to go switch to Esper Dragons, because I have a friend who plays Esper Dragons, and oh my god, he is destroying. He's winning so much just because he seems to have a favorable matchup compared to the other Abzan decks.
Yeah, because the thing is, Abzan decks, from what I've noticed, they play like. It is more of card quality over quantity. Mm-hmm. So they'll play like the one card, and then all of a sudden you run into things like Baltung Invocation, Hero's Downfall, and then later in the game, when you think you can just kind of like slam dunk something, you just get hit by Crux of Fate, and then you just lose 3 creatures, and then they're gonna start playing like Silumgar, and unless you can deal with those cards immediately, you just kind of die.
Yeah. So I'm looking at
But the thing about Esper Dragons, though, is that it's such a slow start against a deck like Mono Red, where if you, even one misstep and you just and Esper Dragons just gets burned out.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of like a circle kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I want to see. I wish right now I could see a little bit more variety, so we can have that rock paper scissors thing going on. Right now, it's really playing the mirror can be so frustrating sometimes, because especially when it comes to a deck like Abzan, because the mirror just means who's gonna top deck better.
Yeah,
and sometimes I'm starting to realize this more and more. Sometimes the mirror just comes down to whose courser is out on the battlefield longer to give you that nice card, the card filtering that you need.
Well, and some one I think I noticed though is that a lot of decks are even just foregoing playing courser though, just because they. They don't mind running like a full playset of Dromoka's Commands, or you know, just having stronger threats out there, because Courser can block, but it's not a very good attacker, and it does give you card advantage, but it does have to sit there for a little while. And some people just feel they just can just forego and just playing stronger threats mm-hmm. and just slamming things a little bit harder than what Courser can offer. Courser is about the only enchantment card that still sees play, though, just because Dromoka's Commands hated everything else out pretty much, except for if you play like Mastery of the Unseen against a control deck.
All right, and then let's see here. What else is interesting in this top 8?
I don't know. I mean, I'm still trying to play my Jeskai deck though, but it does. Pretty well. It doesn't have too much trouble with that.
Is it tokens or Jeskai aggro?
Look kind of like a Jeskai aggro. Like my 2-drop suite is I have a couple of Seekers. I have a Soulfire Grandmaster as the full playset. But I think the card that I think is most notable that I play is the Stratus Dancers. I play those main deck. Just because against like mono green decks, they can't they spend the whole game taking damage from it. And then against like Esper Dragons, you can just flip it face down and then counter one of their spells. I mean, they know what it is, but they either have to remove that or they just have to they're basically like wasting resources because they know what it is.
Right. In this case. So are you still running Mantis Rider?
Yeah, Mantis Rider. I mean, because the thing about Mantis Rider is that card is completely uncontested until about turn 4 or turn 5 when people when I mean, Thunderbreak Regent kind of outclasses it, which sucks. But
right,
a lot
that's
of,
what I was
like,
thinking.
Unless you're running like a red deck, you don't really have to worry about running into that. So Mantis Rider goes unchecked for like two turns after it comes out, unless they remove it immediately.
I see.
So I
see.
I mean, if it deals like six damage to your opponent, it's already done its job and it's done enough damage, and you just need to be able to clear the way just to burn the opponent out.
So is there any white spells that you can use to blank out? I guess what's the closest thing that we have to Path and Standard right now? I guess you could run Pacifism.
I run Valorous Dance.
Okay, yeah, there you go. That's definitely the way to go then. So yeah, I can see that. Maybe you play your Mantis Rider and then you Valorous Dance whatever flyers come up. But that's another thing is the reason Wingmate Rock is so good right now is because besides Silmgar and Ojutai and the big dragons, there's not that many flyers out there right now.
Yeah, exactly. And that's Alex does play Wingmate Rock in one of the decks that he uses, and unfortunately Wingmate Rock is a huge pain for me because I can't just attack it with my Mantis Rider unless I want to get 2-for-1.
Yeah.
And I mean, there were a couple times where I could just like sit back and like rebuy back Valorous Dance and just kill off his creatures with Soulfire Grandmaster, but it was just one of those. I was just like, I don't really know what to do.
Yeah,
but that's pretty cool though. Like getting that lock with Soulfire Grandmaster is nuts. Like you just have like the Rebel Master, you just keep stoking them and then just buy it back with Soulfire Grandmaster. And people are just kind of like, I hate life.
Oh, that's insane! Because yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, because I just kept I just kept making goblins, tapping them out, convoking. There were some matches where I would play like at Cardbox, where I would just come out of the matches with like 40 plus life, just because I just burned the opponent out and they didn't have an answer to Soulfire Grandmaster, so I just kept burning their face and gaining life in the process.
That's
I definitely don't, because Soulfire Grandmaster is actually a pretty cool top deck because you can still have those kind of interactions.
Yeah, it's, you know, it hasn't been doing much, but I guess the Soulfire Grandmaster was what, Fate Reforged?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a shame because I guess come September, it has, in Origins, it has a chance to do something in Standard other than that. That's about it.
What are you talking about in Soak the Flames?
Well, I mean, there's. For it to become a breakout standard card, it only has a couple of more months before it rotates out.
Soulfire Grandmasters from Fate Reforged. Oh, no, it doesn't rotate until March.
No, it rotates this September.
No. You're thinking of Theros Block. Theros Block and M15.
Okay, so what about... So Cons is going to stick around until March?
Yeah.
Really?
Cons and Fate Reforged are rotating in March.
Oh.
And then Dragons and Tarkir stays until next September, 2016.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that's how they're doing it. So it's two rotation dates, but
wow, we've been saying the wrong thing in this podcast for months now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean that's I'm glad because oh my god, that's gonna be insane then because we're gonna have all 10 fetch lands in Standard.
For a time, yeah. It seems like I can predict fetch lands like, you know, everyone else can. I predicted the Onslaught fetches and Cons, but I don't ever say anything until it's actually confirmed because I don't want to be like, yeah, it's dead confirmed, and then it doesn't happen because that kind of thing happened with like Modern Masters where everyone was like, yeah, Serum Vicious is definitely going to be in Inquisition of Kozilek. And there were even some spoilers that were claiming Goblin Guide was in it, and then you know, none of those cards are there. And I'm just like, yeah. Okay, well, I didn't actually say that they were going to be in.
Well, I think, you know, my argument for the fetch lands in Zendikar is the fact that they're iconic. And just like the shock lands go with Ravnica, the fetch lands, the enemy fetch lands go with Zendikar.
Well, that's not even my argument, though. My argument to it is that I remember Mark Rosewater said at one point they don't want to have a cycle of they don't want to have an incomplete cycle anymore. They want to have that full cycle, so that's why they printed that common cycle of game life lands.
Mm-hmm.
So so in September those the pain lands are going out like Battlefield Forge and Ship on Reef. So they're going to have to complement it with something. And unless they reprint those cards, which I don't think they're going to,
yeah.
Then their only real option is the other fetch lands, But the thing is, though, so how do you solve that when it comes to March and then the cons lands rotate out, the cons fetches? How do you solve that? Because then you're going to have an incomplete cycle again.
Well, I mean, they can just print something else. I mean,
but you see what I mean with their whole little cycle thing, right?
Like, there's a lot of different lands they can print. I mean, they could bring back the filter lands. That's actually a great time to bring in the enemy filter lands.
Yeah, well, no, it would be allied filter lands if they're trying to complete the cycle, because it'd be the allied fetch lands that would rotate in March.
The allied fetch lands rotate in March.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, they can bring back the buddy lands.
Yeah, the buddy lands. Well, yeah. Or, I could see that.
Or they can bring back the fast lands.
Which ones were those again?
Those are the comes into the field untapped as long as it's not your, like, you don't have three or more lands in play.
Oh, right. They haven't actually made the full cycle for that. You know, they only made the five from Scars of Mirrodin, and they didn't actually complete it.
That's true. Yeah.
I was excited to see those because I was like, I wanted to see the rest of that cycle.
Yeah, I like them. I think they're good. I mean, I'm sure they're great in tiny leaders.
Oh yeah, for sure. Speaking of, have you made a deck for that yet?
No, I haven't, and it's not a lot of people play it around me, so it's I'm not going to jump at it anytime soon. But yeah, but I think it's time to go because I got to make it to my modern tournament.
Yeah, same. I got to go get ready for Modern Masters.
cool. Yeah, so hopefully, I don't know, if I win more Modern packs, I think I'm just going to take the store credit today.
Well, I'll let you know how my Modern tournament goes. I'm going to feel really bad if I like open a Goyf and then not get first place.
Yeah, that's that. I do hate rare drafting just for that reason alone. But, you know, do you remember how I used to run them? Just so that there was no issues or arguing or fighting, I would just tell people, hey, you get two picks out of your first pack. So if you open the mythical Goyf, foil Goyf pack, just shut up and take your two picks and go.
Yeah.
That
was first pack only? I thought it was all packs.
No, all packs.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, so, first pick from each. Oh, okay, I got you.
Yeah, so whatever your first pick was, I let you do two. And that
actually worked for me because I remember the only time I did Modern Masters with you, or the only time I could do it, was I opened the Bob and then the foil Spell Snare in the one pack.
Yeah, so see, there you go, and that in itself is worth it, and people like that, you know.
Yeah.
All right, man.
But yeah, I gotta get going. I really gotta go.
Me too.
Use the toilet. So.
And then hey, okay, contact information, same thing as always.
So I am Sanki Uchina-san at Twitter, which I don't use, unfortunately. I do use Facebook occasionally. I'm Kuya Chris on Facebook. I'm on the Traveling Mages and on MTG Okinawa. And then I have this here, Skype, and I have a Line account too, but I don't think most people use Line here. So, or most of our listeners use Line.
Yeah. I don't think so either. I don't know. We could be wrong. But, as for me, I'm Jose, _LUIS_LIY on Twitter. And then, as always, just follow us on the, MTG Traveling Mages Facebook group. So see you guys next week.
Hey, thank you for coming in, and yeah, we'll see you next week.